Hello, and welcome back to the Wheel Talk Podcast. My name is Abby Mickey. With me today, as always, Gracie Elvin.
Hey, hey. G'day, everyone. I really know what to say. Feel like I've been off the pod for weeks.
It's only been 1 week.
I know. It feels like more.
And Matt Deneve.
Hello, bike friends. How are we all going?
You know, good.
Good.
We got some good, bike good racing.
Good chat.
Great chat.
Good
and the end.
Thanks for joining us.
We've got some great bike racing to talk about today, but before we dive into that, this episode of the Wheel Talk Podcast is supported by the members of the Escape Collective. Head on over to escapecollective.com/join to join up. We want you to support Escape Collective in a way that suits you best, so you can become a member for unlimited access to the website content, content with our editors and the Escape community on Discord, and stay in the loop on our weekly member newsletters. If Discord isn't your thing and you're not super interested in newsletters, but you want to support what we do, consider signing up as a reader, which will still get you unlimited access to all the great content we publish on theescapecollective.com. Become a member. Join theescapecollective.com/join. Thank you.
And if you do sign up and you think Discord isn't your thing, I would encourage you to have a bit of a poke around and try it out, because while it is a bit involved to start with, the community there, as we talk about every week, is pretty amazing. And I always enjoy going through the Wheel Talk community there and other communities just to see what's happening. And it's a pretty cool bunch of people, really.
Yeah, I think if you like hone in on the channels that really interest you, like I pretty much only pay attention to 3 channels because it is a little bit overwhelming at first. But there's like the Wheel Talk channel. Wheel Talk channel is awesome because it's everyone who listens to this podcast, and all of us are on there all the time with like, if you have any questions or anything, like somebody asked the other day, like how Tom's and I met. Like, great question. I would love to tell you.
A super cute answer too, by the way.
Yeah, it was good.
Stuff like that. So yeah, we talk about stuff that's not just bike related on there. There's the music channel, and if you don't know, Matt and I actually have another podcast called The Album Files that is back. So we get to talk about that a little bit on the music channel. Not affiliated with the Escape Collective. And then there's also like a bunch of parents on there, so you can like chat with other parents of kids that ride bikes and stuff like that, and that's super cool. So there's a couple, like, and there's something for everyone on there, so it's really like, yeah, definitely a community worth kind of diving into, even if, as Matt said, it's a little daunting when you open Discord and it's just complete chaos. But once you weed through the chaos, it's like, oh, okay, this is fine. Anyway, all right. Should we talk about some bike racing? I think. What do you guys think?
Probably.
We should vote. Okay, cool. Should we start with Plouay or start with transfers?
Let's go transfers.
We have just a couple transfers since we last talked about them. Claire Steeles to Movistar. She had an awesome race on Saturday at GP to Plouay. I think she's a great addition to that team. Caroline Swinkles to UAE ADQ, which is a very interesting move for her and quite a loss for Jumbo-Visma, if I do say so.
Yeah, interesting. I think she really showed some value this year, and someone's wanting to pay a little bit more for that, so good for her.
I agree. Femke Gerritsen from Park Hotel Valkenburg to SC Works. She's been kind of floated around as like, quote, the next Demi Vollering. I hate that, but she is quite an exciting prospect, and I think it makes all the sense in the world that she would be picked up by SC Works. They love that Park Hotel kind of feeder situation that they have. That's where Weebus came from, although she made a pit stop in DSM before coming to SC Works, and obviously Vollering went straight from there into SC Works. Yeah, it's a great system.
Yeah. I think Gerritsen kind of got on a lot of people's radar at the Tour last year, the Tour de France Femme Avec Zwift. She was in the QOM jersey for, I think it was 4 days there in the middle, as part of that Park Hotel Valkenburg squad that did a really good job in that competition. And yeah, like you say, Abby, there's a bunch of riders come from that squad, and they're obviously doing something right over there, picking up young, talented riders early on and providing a really nice pathway for them.
I do have one thing to... I would love to ask an SD Works rider, like, of course, if a new rider is signed to that team, it means they've been flagged as, you know, an up-and-comer, someone to develop and someone with some talent under the hood. And so do they feel excited to have another engine on the team or a bit threatened? You know, like, is that some mixed feelings there when they have new signings like this?
That's such a great question, Gracie. And I was actually thinking the same thing. Like, I know, I wonder... I would imagine Anna van der Breggen, when they picked up Demi Vollering, kind of saw it as an exciting thing because she had already announced her retirement and she was already kind of nearing the end. So their dynamic was really cool to watch in the end of van der Breggen's career. But then I feel like maybe for Demi, who's really only in the very beginning of her career, having them sign someone like Femke, like maybe she does feel a little bit threatened.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be, I mean, look, it's kind of the way that the world works and the way that bike racing works.
Yeah.
Like you're always kind of on edge, no matter who you are, you're always on edge a little bit.
Yeah. And I think they all just push each other to be better anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think depending on who you are, that might even motivate you even further to stay ahead of the pack, as it were.
Mm.
To keep those young whippersnappers behind you. And yeah, and while Gritzer is a good rider, she's still got quite a few years before she'll be at Demi's level. So yeah, I think Demi doesn't need to worry too much just now. But yeah, if anything, it might just motivate her further. And seeing more riders come from that same team is probably motivating as well.
Yeah. Well, if nothing else, she won't be going under the radar wearing that jersey next year.
It's not possible. Probably the most interesting transfer news of the week. Zoe Backstead moves to Canyon-SRAM with immediate effect. She's been on EF Tibco Silicon Valley Bank and was doing both cyclocross and road for them. And so Linda Jackson said in a statement that it was important for her to get Zoe onto a new program before the cyclocross season, since that EF Tibco Silicon Valley Bank team will fold at the end of this year as we know it. We've talked about it before, but not folding entirely, but folding, yes, as it is. So Zoe Backstead to Canyon-SRAM, which is a very interesting move. I think makes sense in terms of Zoe Backstead, very versatile rider, will add a lot to Canyon-SRAM, and also can be a great representative for Canyon and SRAM in multiple disciplines. She's obviously like an incredible cyclocross racer as well, world champion over there. So I think it's a great move. I personally would not want to be directed by my father, but that is not that I don't love him, like love the guy. But I do remember when he was like my soccer coach when I was like six. It wasn't a great dynamic. So
yeah.
It's a tricky tight rope to walk, isn't it? Because you don't want to be favoring your kid and giving them preferential treatment above anybody else, but you also don't want to go too far the other direction and kind of freeze them out in front of everybody else. And yeah, I don't envy either of them in that situation, actually. And I hope it works out for them.
I think I wish that she'd been picked up by Trek, because I would have loved to see like the two Backstead sisters racing together on the same team. And it would have been the same situation as far as like being able to support her goals in multiple disciplines with like the best equipment. And I think she also would have added to that team. So I was a little bit surprised, but also not surprised to see this transfer. What's cool is that it's literally right away. Like today, or as we're recording, Tuesday is the start of the CMAC Ladies Tour, and she's on the provisional start list for Canyon-SRAM, which would be wild. Like imagine you're racing for EF Tibco SVB like last week, and then this week you're on Canyon-SRAM.
She's got a 3-year deal as well, it looks like, so... plenty of time to find her groove there, and even more till 31st of August 2026 apparently, so 3 years, so that's a decent contract. And I think
cyclocross contracts are so weird.
I'm surprised, well, I'd forgotten how young she is. She's still only 18, like still such a good rider for such a young rider, and a lot of time still to develop. So yeah, hopefully she gets into a nice groove over there.
As of recording on Tuesday, like 2 hours before the start of the CMAC Ladies Tour, she's still on the start list for that as Canyon-SRAM. It would be so weird to be this late in the season and have to do a new bike setup.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Have to completely change all your equipment. I mean, I remember when we went from speed play pedals to time pedals, and I had like 2 months to adjust, and I still had knee problems going into the first race of the year. That's me. Some people can transfer equipment like super easily, but I'm definitely not alone. A lot of people struggle to transfer equipment. Gracie, back me up.
I agree with that, but I'm not one of those people. I'm sorry. I'm very robust.
I'm delicate. All right. Well, speaking of robust people, that was a terrible transition. Let's talk about GB de Plouay. It was a great race, per usual. I love this race. The last 15 kilometers was just relentless. It was just like attack after attack after attack. But I feel like a couple of the talking points of the day was just an incredible ride from Suzanne Anderson. The first attack of the day and out there until like 10 kilometers to go. She had some help in the beginning and all the way until kind of the last two circuits, but she was out there on her own in the end and got swept up. There was a really beautiful moment where Rooster gave her a point pat on the back. Good job, little one. But it was such a great move. And it was great to see Uno X out there for so on the attack like that. And also Suzanne Anderson, I think it's an interesting kind of change for her in her career, having gone from DSM and being kind of one of the lead out women for Weebis onto a new team that is a little bit more of a hometown team. As the Norwegian national champion, that team is very much like Scandinavian. So it's cool for her to be there. And it was great to see that move. And then, yeah, pretty much before she got brought back, but also after she got brought back, it was just many, many attacks. Probably the most dangerous attack from Liana Lippert with just under 10 kilometers to go. I thought for sure she had it, but the aggression from the peloton just never let up. And in the end, it was a reduced bunch sprint won by Misha Bredewalde. So another SC Works win, but arguably one of the most exciting of the year, I would say. I didn't see it coming, especially with Balsamo in that group.
No, I don't think many people would have seen it coming, but she obviously timed it to perfection. But yeah, going back just to what you were saying, Abby, like, yeah, definitely those last 15 kilometers were on. Like it was relentless, and it was worth watching just for that maybe last 30K. You could see the setup into that. And it's one of those strange races where it doesn't look that hard on paper, but for some reason it's just pretty brutal. I went back and looked through the last 10 years of results because I was like, I feel like this is one of the bigger groups that have finished together at in the front for a while. And, you know, 10 years ago, it was solo winners, groups of 10 or 15 max. And the last 4 or 5 years, it has increased that front group, which tells us a lot about the strength, the depth in the women's peloton now, because this course used to be a really selective, decisive course. And it was always, you know, Voss, Johansson, Deignan, Elisa Longaborghini, like all the top names would be winning or thereabouts in the past. I also think that it's maybe not as a prestigious race anymore as it used to be. Not that it wasn't as hard to win, but I think this is a really great race now to see all of these riders at this point of the season that maybe didn't have to do some of those bigger blocks, and they're getting their time to shine. So it wasn't just Bredewald that we were seeing. It was plenty of other really interesting names that haven't been flogged to death by this stage of the season, and some of the younger riders too. So I think like the last few years we have been seeing some more interesting winners and slightly bigger finish groups. Just the way it's raced, the depth is getting better, and the nature of the season and all of these newer, bigger races like the Tour de France Femmes and the classic season, that's just more and more stacked every year. So yeah, I do love this race. When I used to race it, I had a love-hate relationship with it because I would always be creeping at this point of the season, but it was one of those courses that I thought I could have done okay on. I just had lots of bad memories from this, but I like to watch it because it's so attritional and way harder than it looks. So, yeah, it was cool to watch the finale today and see Who else was kind of showing their cards too?
I still have nightmares about that chicane right after the start-finish line.
Oh.
You go like a sharp left, sharp right, sharp left, and then a right again. And that chicane is terrifying. On that note, like riders that impressed in the finale, but opposite from what you're saying, she did do a huge block, including the Tour de l'Avenir. I was really impressed with Cedrine Cabal, who
yep.
was the best young rider at the Tour, obviously, but she was on the attack like a ton in the final kilometers of the race, which was cool to see. I'm curious how long she's going to stay on Sarah Tizet WNT, and if that team is maybe going to go World Tour next year, because they've never had the budget to, they've always been in the ranking, but they've never had the budget to be able to do it. So I wonder if next year they're going to try to make it happen, because they've got riders like her. She signed through 2025, actually, with Sarah Tizet WNT. So that's a pretty long contract for a rider who's shown this much promise on a team that's, as far as I can tell, not interested in joining the World Tour.
So talking about the sprint, which is, it's like a straight shot sprint, but it kind of kicks up a little bit and it's like really easy to fuck up. And I think that a few riders over the years have hit out too early and you just die in those last 20 meters before the line. And so I'm always looking forward to the sprint as well. And because the group was about nearly 30 riders, it was like, it was a proper sprint too. So there was a huge attack, another attack from Rusa right in the end, coming into that last kilometer to go. And so she kind of did this really great job as a semi lead out for her teammate in Bredewald, but I didn't really see them talking that much. I'm not really sure what their real plan actually was, but it worked out for them. I'd say that they were keeping Bredewald pretty fresh because apparently she's quite fast, and so it was a good shot for her, and she nailed it.
Apparently.
And she nailed she nailed the timing, but someone else had also nailed the timing and read it quite well, that I was really impressed with, was fourth place getter Ruby Roseman Gannon. And of course I'm a bit biased because she's Australian and I've been keeping an eye on her, but she was on the wheel of Bredewald when she hit out, and so they pretty much jumped at the same time. You could just see that Ruby was just a little bit more fatigued and maybe just one gear too big. So I think that she would have taken a lot of confidence away from her performance as well. She is a fantastic bike racer. She really gets racing, and you really need lots of experience at this top end to keep that confidence up. And I think she's had a bit of a rocky year so far. So I think that was an awesome result for her to come away with. A bit frustrating to not quite good on the podium, but like I just wanted to give kudos to her because she did everything right in the finale, just didn't quite have the legs for the top three.
Yeah, as you said, a tough year for her, but also has managed 11 top fives this year, so she's been right around the mark in a lot of different races.
Mm.
And I think, yeah, like you said, she'll take a lot away from Plouay, but I think she'll take a lot away from this season as a whole, and I hope that she sticks at it and has people in her ear telling her that win isn't far away, because it doesn't feel like it is. It feels like she's right in the mix a lot, and yeah, I hope she takes a lot from this season and maybe comes back next season and gets that big win. And as we often see, it often just takes one win to kind of open the floodgates and create that self-belief, and yeah, she's not far away for sure.
But I think, like, Bertazzolo had an awesome sprint to take third. She wasn't as well positioned and had a lot of speed coming through and had to kind of navigate a lot of people in front of her. So I was impressed with that third place for her also. And Marta Locke, who's another Sarah Tizet WNT rider, getting second for her. Sarah Tizet sponsors the race, so for them having that jersey on the podium is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little more about Bredewald, because I completely forgot that this was her first year on SD Works. I feel like when I was chatting with her about her favorite Taylor Swift song, Wildest Dreams, outside of the SD Works bus at the Tour de France Femme, she has this, like, she's very Dutch, has like this air of very seriousness to her. And so I just walked away from that conversation kind of in the back of my mind, like, oh, she's always been on this team. And it wasn't until I was writing the CMAC Ladies Tour preview that's on escapecollective.com, if you want to check it out, that I realized that she won the final stage of that race last year. So this wasn't even her first World Tour win. It was her second.
Yeah, a really exciting talent. I think we mentioned it before, but I was surprised that she was able to win from a group that big. Because if you look back at her previous results, you know, her two wins this year were both one solo. Her other wins have been small groups, two, three, five riders. And as you said, Abby, with Bolsamo in the group, I don't think many would have predicted her winning that. I wonder if the slightly uphill nature of it helped, or if she is just sneakily faster than we gave her credit for. Either way, an awesome result. For sure.
Speaking of Bolsamo, Lidl Trek kind of did the most work of anybody. They really had riders on the front for most of the kilometers that we had a break, the customary break out front. They had Brody Chapman doing a ton of work with Lisa Klein on the front, and then Lizzie Dagnan really putting in a lot of work to make sure that nothing got away in the closing kilometers. And then Bolsamo just didn't have it in the end. She ended up 15th, kind of started the sprint and then sat down and just shook her head and, yeah, let the race go. I was a little bit bummed to see that because I feel like Dagnan is riding so well that they maybe could have done some different tactics. Something in line with, like, DSM Firmenich, who were super aggressive in those circuits, especially for Pfeiffer Georgie. She was really aggressive, and we also saw Juliette Labous on the attack as well. So there was a lot of I think that they could have maybe done it a little bit differently, just seeing how Bolsamo sprinted. But I also think she had to do a lot more work than obviously Bredewold had to do in the end, especially, like, there was this moment that you saw Leanna Lippert attack, and then it was Rooser and Bolsamo on the front, and they just kind of looked at each other and, like, shook their heads. and Bolsamo was looking around like, where are my teammates? But at that point, Lidl Trek had done so much work that there was none left. Eventually, Amanda Spratt came back to get on the front a bit, but interesting stuff going on over there on the American team.
Did anyone notice too that Audrey, like, did something weird in the sprint? I watched it, like, over and over again. And she, like, swung into someone, and I can't remember what happened now, but yeah. I watched that sprint like 10 times from above because I was trying to figure out who did what and when, and I couldn't take my eyes off Audrey because she just, I don't know, yeah, she just swung real hard into another rider. Didn't quite nail it.
This is her, like, hometown race, and there's always some Audrey drama that comes out of this race. Like, I remember one year when, I think it was maybe the first year she was on Trek, she was saying something outside the bus to a friend, like something about how she was annoyed with the tactics because they'd been riding for, I think, Aliza or something, and she'd really wanted the team to race for her. And there was a journalist, like, standing there who, like, recorded what she was saying and put it on Cycling News. And it was this whole big drama in the Trek camp because then, like, Audrey had to apologize and they were, like, in contact with Cycling News, like, you have to take this down. She was, like, chatting with a friend and you published it like she was talking, like, to you, which wasn't the case. And so it was really interesting. But, yeah, I feel like with this race, there's always something with Audrey because she just cares so much about this race.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't bad. It wasn't a big boo-boo, but I was like, oh, it could have been bad.
Yeah.
She also attacked earlier in the race. I can't remember where that was, but her attack on the grass.
Yeah.
pretty sure you're not supposed to do that, but anyway, whatever.
Yeah, for sure. It was some interesting moves. I mean, overall, I think this race was interesting. And it was exciting to watch, especially, like you said, Gracie, the last 30K. But I think it suffered a bit from being post-Worlds because it's never going to be, like, in a normal year, it's pre-Worlds. So it's kind of like a tune-up. And this year, obviously, that's not the case. So it was definitely a different set of people who showed up to the race, different tactics that were used. And yeah, but still just super exciting for me.
I feel a bit like that with all of the racing that's happened after Worlds, to be honest.
That should be over.
It just feels like it was such a conclusion, everything built towards that, particularly being the Super Worlds with all the disciplines there. It felt like a kind of natural culmination. And then, yeah, we've got CIMAC this week and then still got Romandy and then the Chinese races, and like it just goes on and on.
It was like last year when everyone just kind of forgot that Romandy and the women's tour existed because the women's tour was moved to the end of the season. And I was writing like the race reports for both of those races that are getting like 12 clicks.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's plenty of riders that are a bit over it, but there's plenty of other riders that are using this as a great opportunity to get some results.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like for Misha, she won her first World Tour one day. It was a huge result for her. She was obviously really excited. Never in her wildest dreams would she have seen this coming.
Nice.
Well done.
I wrote it in the race report and I was like, no one is going to know what reference you I'm referencing.
You should have linked back to the Taylor Swift story that you wrote.
I really should have, Matt. You should be my editor.
I should. We should look into that.
All right, should we talk a little bit about the other race that was going on last week that we didn't get to watch? No live coverage of it yet, however, hopefully in the future, but is a huge, in my opinion, a huge step forward in the development of women's cycling. We had the first ever women's Tour de l'Avenir, a U23 race. It was 5 stages. It had some really incredible riders on the start line. Cedrine Cabal was there for France. We had Neve Bradbury was there for Australia, Julia De Wild for Belgium, Magdalene, the Canadian rider on EF Tivco SVB. The British team was not arguably the strongest with Anna Shackley. We had Alice Towers, Abby Smith, Zoe Backstead, and Antonia Niedermeyer for Germany, Gaia Riolini for Italy, Van Anroy and Femme Van Empel for the Netherlands. Kaya Schmidt, who is an incredible U.S. racer. She raced on Human Powered Health for 2 years, but she was also second at the Worlds in Leuven. So, yeah, really exciting. Up-and-coming talent who's had a bit of a rough go on Human Powered Health. Naomi Ruig for the Swiss. And I think, like, when it comes to the start list, the major bummer for me was no team from New Zealand with how much young talent they have. Like, obviously, they have Niamh Fisher-Black, one of the podcast favorites, but they also have a lot of other riders that I think they could have put together a team that would have rivaled the British team for me. So I was a little bummed that they didn't have anyone there.
Yeah, Kim Kadzar that we talked about last week would obviously have been a great selection for that team. And do we know why the Kiwis didn't field a squad?
I would assume it's budget related. Because I think going to a 5-day race in France for a smaller nation, that budget would be hard to find. Like most of the teams that the nations that fielded teams are nations that have at least some budget. And I think for the Kiwis, it's not, they don't have a ton, from what I know. And like, especially having it happen after Worlds, I know like for a lot of nations, Worlds this year was a massive strain on the budget. Like everyone complained last year about Australia, but that was really only the flights and the everything in Glasgow was expensive. And for a lot of nations, having to be in Glasgow for 10 days was, a huge chunk of budget gone. With the way that everything was spread out.
Yeah, one of the downsides of Super Worlds, hey? The fact that there's just so little accommodation. You saw some riders posting on social media in the lead up looking for accommodation. And yeah, I wonder if that'll be looked at for the next Super Worlds in, 4 years? I think it's in France somewhere.
At least France is a little bit more affordable. And also, they had like a lot of nations were staying like an hour and a half away from Glasgow because they like couldn't find anything near the city that was within the budget. But I mean, yeah. Anyway, Antonia Niedermeyer won the opening TT in the U23 World Champion jersey, which is pretty cool. The U23 World Champs don't get to wear those jerseys all that often. So pretty cool for her. like a week, 2 weeks after winning that to be able to pull it on and then win in it, which was pretty rad. Linda Zetti, the Swiss rider, won the sprint ahead of Julie de Wilde and Femme Van Empel on the second stage, but Femme Van Empel got her revenge and took the third stage from a reduced peloton. As we probably would have expected, Guy Riolini won when the climbs started at stage four, with Sharon Van Anroy taking second and Anna Shackley coming in third. Pretty impressive performance by Anna Shackley, but we'll get to that in just a second. Sharon Van Anroy won the fifth stage by almost 2.5 minutes over Anna Shackley and took the overall. So the European U23 world, the U23 European champion, first ever winner of the women's Tour de l'Avenir.
Yeah, like you said, the seeing Niedermeyer wear the under 23 world champs skin suit was great. Getting to see Van Anroy wear the Euro champs jersey was great. There's just not that many opportunities on the calendar to do that, so to see that was awesome. We should say Niedermeyer was leading the race all the way until that stage five. She was 14 seconds clear even after that climbing stage that Riolini won. And it was only on that final stage where she blew up. And I think she and somebody else marked themselves out of the race was the report that I read a bit further down the field. And then she had a bad day. And so, disappointing way for her to not win that race, I guess. But I think she continues to show that she's a massive talent who's really... really put herself in the spotlight this season with that Giro d'Onna stage win and then the world title as well. So, so much to look forward to in her future and for German cycling, I think, with her and Bauernfeind, among others.
I think she lost maybe 6 minutes on that final stage. She finished with Femme Van Empel, the two of them together, fourth and fifth. So still top five, but yeah, 6.5 minutes back and ended up fourth overall. And Anna Shackley, who's such an exciting rider from Great Britain, Scottish, got to race on her home roads in Glasgow. Taking second overall, I think, is awesome for her. She was pretty vocal before the race or at least she did an interview before the race about how hard it is to go from the junior ranks where you're winning into the elite ranks all of a sudden and then have your confidence really knocked by the fact that you're racing against Marianne Vos and you're kind of just holding on to get 50th. So I was pretty excited to see Anna Shackley up there as well.
Yeah, it's so different. Like, it's obviously good exposure to be doing those World Tour races to see what the level is and what the racing is. But like, to get your head knocked in year after year and you're not really learning how to win in those last kilometers, it really makes or breaks a lot of riders, unfortunately. The ones that do make it sometimes will never know how to win because they kind of get pigeonholed into these roles because they were this up-and-coming junior star and then they didn't quite get those results early on and so then they become domestiques or just don't quite get that support to go for bigger results later. Some riders just don't make it at all, which is the worst part. So, yeah, it's so awesome to see them having this opportunity as an under 23 race, not even just a lower level race, but yeah, junior race. It's fantastic. Hopefully we see more. I'd love to see this kind of race be like the men see it, almost like a draft pick for the World Tour teams in the next season or two. It's quite late in the season. A lot of the top teams have already filled their rosters by now for next year. So hopefully they've taken note of some of these riders for future years and some of the smaller teams or other teams that haven't quite filled out their rosters yet can snap them up and that will just be creating better depth across all teams ultimately anyway.
And a lot of the riders that we saw succeed at this race are on World Tour teams already, but I hope that with more development teams being added and a second tier being introduced in 2025, I hope that the next step is that World Tour teams aren't able to do the smaller level races so that riders on those development teams and in the pro tour teams and continental teams get a chance to succeed without kind of being stomped on by like world tour teams that have a pretty thick calendar already, we still have them showing up to a lot of the lower level races, and it doesn't help the development very much. So yeah, I think it's a huge step forward to have this race. I'd like to see like more than just this on the calendar, but more than anything, I would just really like to see them lean into this as part of what is going to help the base of women's cycling in the future. We talk about it all the time, but it's so important.
Yep. I'd love to see at least one day race earlier in the year around the classics time, or maybe like just post classics, like in May, where the world champion of under 23s can wear the stripes in a race and they can have a nice one day classic as well as a stage race later in the year.
Like a U23 Flanders.
Yeah.
That'd be sweet.
Exactly.
Yeah. You look at the men's side and there's a lot of opportunities for the under 23 men in that regard. You know, that those sort of races, also a bunch of Italian one days that are seen as real proving grounds for the up and comers. So yeah, it'd be great to see more of that on the women's side for sure.
I give the UCI a hard time a lot of the time because they have done a really great job at some things, but really lacked at a lot of other things. But I do think that they are paying attention to some of the major issues in women's cycling, and like maybe they don't go about it the right way, like introducing a U23 Worlds jersey but adding it to the women's race. The thought was there, and we will get a standalone race in 2025, which we are slowly approaching, and like having another tier and stuff like that. And so I'm wondering what their next step is going to be, but I just hope that they're paying attention to the kind of the problem now of the amount of races on the calendar that are just completely bulldozed by the World Tour teams that aren't World Tour races. Because I think that's riders like Anna Shackley need a chance to win. Like Sharon Van Anroy wins World Tour races already. But there are a lot of other riders that are U23 that don't get that opportunity, don't have that talent that they need to win for other things than just being able to know how, but like confidence. Kaia Schmidt said before the race that she's not been on a podium in, I think, 2-3 years, and it's really knocked her confidence a ton. And when you're struggling in races just to finish in the top 50 or just to finish when it comes to the spring classics, it's really hard to keep that motivation going. And I think for young riders coming into the sport that have to go straight from the juniors into the world tour, motivation and keeping confidence is really, really hard. So I hope that this can help build their confidence.
Yep. Agreed.
This and more to come.
Stay tuned.
It's
more
probably
to come.
It's probably also on race organizers too, isn't it? You know, it's not just the UCI. We need to, see more race organizers willing to put on under 23 women's races like the Tour de l'Avenir was able to do this year. And I think they were kind of nudged in that direction, or they were given some assistance by sponsors to strike out in that direction finally. But yeah, maybe more needs to be done by race organizers to really lead the charge and put those events on rather than it coming from above.
Yeah, it's interesting because you have races like, Turingen was vocal this year about how they want the best riders to show up to their race, so they want to be world tour, which is like a facepalm moment because you're like, God, but it's such a great race for non-world tour teams to get an opportunity, because there are world tour teams that show up, but it's not always the top teams this year. Obviously, SC Works showed up and won every stage with a different rider every day. But in years past, like, that's not been the case. And so there needs to be some kind of incentive for races to be able to, I don't know, that's not just like out of the goodness of their heart, because at a certain point that, I don't know what the answer is, though. It's above my pay grade.
Same.
I thought we were going to solve the issue tonight.
I need like 2 more coffees, if that's the case. Should we just do a really quick preview for the CMAC Ladies Tour and then wrap this bad boy up?
Can we talk about Marianne Vos quickly?
Oh, yeah. I completely forgot about that in the news portion. Matt, you want to take it?
Yeah, I think we got some answers about why she hasn't been at her best this year. She went in for surgery last week on her iliac artery and said that she'd been struggling with it for quite a while. I assume it was the same one she had surgery on in February this year, the same injury. Could be wrong on that, but either way, I feel like it gives us a little bit of context about why she hasn't been at her best this year, and seems like it's been an issue for quite a while for her, so hopefully this gets things sorted out and she'll be back next year. She's said that she's very motivated to come back and be back at her best next year, so let's hope she can do that, because as we've spoken about many times, when she's in full flight, it's a pretty amazing thing to watch.
Yeah, I'm glad we got some answers, because I was concerned, since she's one of my favorite riders of all time, I was concerned that maybe we were reaching the end of the Voss era, but thank God we're not. There's more Voss to come in the future.
It will never end.
How old is she now? 32?
Nah.
Sounds right.
She's like, I thought she was 35.
36, wow, okay.
Oh, wow, 36?
Yeah, I thought she was a year older than me.
I just found there's a media report from February this year saying that it was an iliac artery constriction that she had surgery for earlier this year. So, yeah, not sure if it's the same thing, but, that would make sense given she said she's been struggling with it for a lot of the season.
It wasn't until Taylor Wiles had the surgery on both of her iliac arteries last year, only to find out that neither of the surgeries were successful this year, that I found out that you can have the surgery and it can have no effect on the iliac artery endofibrosis, which is pretty devastating for Taylor, who is retiring, obviously, but for other people as well. Yeah. There's been so many riders who have got that iliac artery surgery and come back way, way stronger. Like Van Vleuten is probably the easiest example.
Yeah, it's a very risky surgery. It's a huge amount of recovery and, yeah, no guarantees. So it's a pretty tough decision to make to have it in the first place. Some riders do manage their symptoms and problems just with physiotherapy and lots of rehabby type stuff, but sometimes it's not enough. But, yeah, frustrating if it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Marianne Vos has had it before in the past too, like years ago.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure as well. A couple years, like 5 years ago maybe or something. A while ago, more than that. I wonder if it has to do with like bike fit. I mean, we are not the ones to answer these questions. But it does seem like riders who have that problem, that it does eventually come back like down the road. She's not the first rider that I know of that's had to have a second surgery.
I do know that the price is almost doubled though for that surgery because it's more common, which is a bit shitty.
I love that for people. No, it's like the price of, that's a terrible example. I'm just not even going to say it out loud. Okay. Should we talk about the C-Mac Ladies Tour? A race that was forgotten in my mind, but is definitely happening this week. And I also forgot how exciting last year was because we had two stage wins by Wiebes, but we also had a solo victory from Rihanna Marcus. We had the final stage. It was a two-up sprint won by Bredewald. So, and Audrey Cordon-Margaux won the time trial. So it came down to like 10 seconds at the end for Wiebes to take the overall. So I forgot that it was actually quite an exciting couple days of racing in the Netherlands last year. This year, we start with a prologue, 2.4 kilometer long prologue, and move into a stage race that is very flat. There's a couple climbs, but it's in the Netherlands, so they're overpasses at best. And then they go on to Belgium for one day where they race a 7.2 kilometer long time trial in Leuven, which Capecchi is going to be stoked about that. And then stage three, a road stage that is a little bit lumpy, but stage four is the really exciting stage in Valkenburg, which finishes on the Kauberg and is up and down all day long. If you are like, oh man, I cannot watch bike racing this week, you should definitely watch the stage on Saturday, because that's going to be an awesome stage. And then the final stage is like two kermesses. They basically do like a kermesse and then they ride over and do another kermesse. It's 150 kilometer long stage. So it's going to be, yeah, pretty exciting, I think, that day as well. The start list is jam-packed, especially SD Works. They may have showed up to GP de Plouay with not their A team, besides Roycer. They still won it, but they've got their A team at the CMAC Ladies Tour with Lotta Kopecky, Demi Vollering, and the defending champion, Lorena Wiebes. So that is a hard trio to beat.
On any stage. Imagine if
literally
they won
every single stage.
Imagine if they won every stage. That would just be taking the piss, but they probably could.
No, I mean, but they probably will. I mean, they've got like the first stage could be either Kopecky or Wiebes, because it's that short effort is great for the sprinters. And I feel like if you're looking at that first stage, Matt and I did a bit of a chat that's in the preview on the website. If you want to read it, we talk a little bit about, I mean, everything. But if you're looking at that first stage, like, I think maybe that is the only stage where I feel they could be beaten. And that's because there's a lot of track riders right now that are really, really strong coming off of Worlds that are seeing that 2.4 kilometer long prologue as their chance to win a stage of a World Tour race. Like Georgia Baker, for example, will be riding super well on that stage, I feel like.
Yeah, definitely. That's going to be a good stage, good close stage.
It's today. By the time you listen to this podcast, it's over. The stage, you'll know whether or not SC Works or Georgia Baker won. But I also feel like, given the course, coming off of Suzanne Anderson's amazing ride at GP de Plouay, I'm actually one of the riders I'm most excited about in this race is Eleanor Barker. She was riding super well on the track at Worlds. And I feel like with the short, flat time trial and the prologue, and really all she has to do is just hold on for the rest of it. And I don't think she can win the thing overall, but I do think that Uno X might get their first World Tour stage race podium at the end of this week.
It's a big call. I'd love to see it.
I just got a lot of nodding and Matt's eyebrows went all the way to his hairline.
Oh, it'd be great to see, obviously. But I'm not sure that prologue is going to be as decisive as you think it is.
I don't think it's going to be decisive. I think it will set the stage for what's to come.
Maybe. I think Kopecky just rides away from everyone on stage four and blows it apart. I don't know. Hopefully not, but
I think stage four is definitely the stage that is going to decide the race. It's very much like a Amstel Gold type course, so like an Ardennes race. So I think, like Matt said in our preview on the site, escapecollective.com, we're probably not going to see minutes after that stage, but there is going to be gaps. I think this race is going to be harder to win than last year's CMAC Ladies Tour. But I still think that the way that Wiebes was riding at Tour of Scandinavia, especially that second stage that she won, I don't know what SC Works is going to do, well, what they're planning to do, but I wouldn't be surprised if they have Demi Vollering in more of like a domestique role at this race, working for Wiebes. Given all the work that Wiebes has done for her all year long, I think that once we get to this, Matt furrowed brow, crosses arms. Once we get to this stage in the season, that's when we see roles like that kind of switch up a bit in races, because there's less on the line.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder about the Kalberg. I think Wiebes is obviously climbing super well, but the stage finishes at the top of the Kalberg and it's a really hard climb. So is she good enough to be at the front up there? Because I think you have to be in the top couple riders to win the tour. Like, I don't think she's going to make up enough time anywhere else. So I could be wrong. I mean, if she wins this race overall, when it has a stage that finishes atop the Kalberg, then good on her. But I am skeptical.
Yeah. I don't
think we have to talk about Annemiek van Vleuten as well.
Yeah.
Sorry, Gracie.
No, I don't think that she can do it either. I think that she wants to prove that she's not just a sprinter, but there's Annemiek van Vleuten, which was a good segue. I don't know if Annemiek can also win this tour either, but she's certainly going to be making it extremely difficult on that stage four and that final. So like whoever's still there is going to be some of the better climbers.
Yeah, I think it really depends how much of an impact a 7 kilometer long time trial can have on the overall. It's not long. So I feel like, yeah, for Annemiek, she's going to have a really hard time winning this, her last race, but she has said that she's not going for GC. And I think for her, like, she's just wants to end her career on Dutch roads, which
I mean,
it's Annemiek, so of course you don't know about it. But I feel a little bit like, I feel a little in denial, like
about her finishing.
Yeah, I don't know. It's gonna be weird, isn't it? Yeah, like even Tour de Romandie, like maybe it won't feel weird because perhaps she wouldn't have raced it anyway. But when we get to like Strada next year, and I'm writing out the preview, and I don't have to write Annemiek van Vleuten, winner of 20 Strada Bianchis in her career, then it's gonna feel really odd. Weirder than Anna van der Breggen retiring. I won't lie.
She's been around for a really long time.
Yeah, like van der Breggen retiring felt like a fitting, like it was a fitting moment in her career to kind of like
sidle
off into the team car. Yeah, but like Van Vleuten is just, she's such a formidable, like slightly terrifying, but also like quite bubbly. I don't know. She's just like.
I think as good as van der Breggen was, and she was amazing, I think van Vleuten at her very best dominated the sport in a way that few have. And so I think we'll feel that loss more keenly. She hasn't been that dominant this year, obviously, but I think at her peak, you know, there were times where she would start the unbackable favorite and she, you know, no one could do anything about it. So
she still destroyed the Giro.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the tour that really had me like, oh man, the end.
The end. That was definitely a taste of the end. So I don't know. I'd love to see her get a stage win at least, if not the overall. That would be a really nice way to finish it off. And she had a really nice post on Instagram yesterday, just, you know, saying that the Holland Ladies Tour was one of the first pro races she got to do. And a few nice things about her dad, who is no longer with us. So it holds a really sentimental spot for her. So I just hope that she has a good week and that she gets to finish the race and that there's no mechanicals or crashes or anything like that. She can enjoy it. She can experience the emotions. She can experience the pats on the back and all of those nice things that she deserves. I've got good memories of racing with her there and helping her win that tour a couple of times. So yeah, I'll be watching with good feelings as well and gratitude, because it was pretty cool being a teammate of her sometimes. So then it's been cool to also commentate on her and talk on this podcast about her. And like you guys have just said, like she's left this mark on the sport that not many other people have. So we definitely have to pay our respect and credit to her this week.
Is there any chance she gets to the end of this season? And I've raised this before, but is there any chance she gets to the end of this season and goes, not quite done yet, and goes back around for another year?
I feel like I think I thought that before chatting with Iris at the tour, but I think talking to Iris at the tour that it kind of, I don't know, it felt like for someone who's way closer to Annemiek than us, obviously, that it sounds like she's done.
What do you reckon, Gracie? You know her pretty well.
I'd say she's done. Yeah, I think she's made the decision in her mind and she's really carried herself with a lot of pride this year. She's been a gracious winner and a gracious rider in defeat. And I think that she's done it. She's lifted every stone. She's left no stone unturned in her career and this year. And I think she is going to walk away with her head held high. And I'm sure she still has some feelings of what could have been. I don't think there's an athlete in the world that doesn't feel that. And she probably just feels it slightly less than some of the rest of us. So I think she'll be okay with that.
Well, we'll definitely talk about her more next week. Before we talk about really quickly what we're obsessed with, I just want to mention a couple other riders on the start list. We've got Rianna Marcus, who has been amazing this year, maybe not so much in this tail end of the season, but she won a stage last year. There's a time trial, so definitely worth keeping an eye on. Shrin Van Anroy is back, clearly on flying form. Kashani Wadoma is back in the peloton after the Tour de France Femme. Didn't get to race Worlds because of a viral infection, but she's won AMSTEL Gold Race, so I think worth having her in mind for that fourth stage. Lucinda Brand, Charlotte Kuhl for the sprints. So we're going to have Wiebes, Kuhl, and Balsamo all sprinting against each other. So that will be pretty fun. Anna Henderson coming off a storming ride at the TT at Worlds where she got fourth. So excited for that. Pfeiffer Georgie, who had an awesome ride, obviously, at GP de Plouay. I mentioned Eleanor Barker and Alexander Manley. So I feel like overall, the start list, very exciting. We're in for five good days of racing. So keep an eye on GCN Plus for the coverage. EscapeCollective.com for the race reports by yours truly and any other analysis and stuff.
Abby, you said we're in for five good days of racing. It's a six-stage race, so I'm just wondering which stage you don't think is going to be the good one. Is it the prologue you're not looking forward to? Or?
Actually, I am looking forward to the prologue. No, I would say stage three. Yeah. The stage after the time trial. That looks like a pretty boring stage. No, I'm just kidding. I forgot it was 6 days. All right. Matt, what are you obsessed with lately?
Oh, put me on the spot.
Yep.
I did. So a few months ago, I talked about a sci-fi book series I've been reading called The Expanse. I finally finished it this week after, I reckon, probably a year. I reckon it's taken me reading other stuff in between as well, but nine books plus a collection of short stories, which I finished this week. It's just unbelievable. And I finished it, I think it was actually last night, finished it while I was lying in bed and just kind of had a moment of just feeling quite sad about it being over. You know, you spend so long living with these characters and in this world, and you know, this world, the world of the series, you know, lasts several decades, and you meet, you know, different generations and all this kind of thing, and you get quite invested in it. So I feel quite quite sad to be leaving that behind, and very much on the lookout for good sci-fi that is on the same level. For anyone that's listening that's got good recommendations, please let me know on Discord. I am looking for good recommendations, but I'm excited that I still have a couple of seasons of the TV show to get through, so that gives me a little bit of breathing room to get over the fact that I've now finished the series.
You could read Fourth Wing now.
Yes, I've had multiple people tell me that I need to read Fourth Wing. How would you describe it, Abby? It's fantasy, is that romanticy? Is that
romanticy sounds right?
Romanticy?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I learned that word this week. I didn't realize it was a thing, but it's very much a thing, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very much that. It's like, for anyone who likes Sarah J. Maas, you'll also like Fourth Wing.
Yeah, it's on my list to read. I'm looking forward to it.
Have you read Sarah J. Maas?
I haven't. My partner has, and she adores her. But I just haven't yet.
You would get along really well.
You really would, yeah.
Someday. Someday we'll meet. Yeah, I would recommend Fourth Wing. You'll feel embarrassed reading it, but it's because it's like, I don't know, young adult, but it's still. Gracie?
I'll just say something that I wanted to say a few weeks ago, but I ended up saying something else. And then we talked about the World Cup. So it's a bit of an, I'm not obsessed with it quite anymore because I finished it. And I watched the first or the only two seasons of this show called Heartstopper. I don't know if you guys have watched it, but it's like so sweet. And I don't know, it just made me feel really good. It was just like this, speaking of young adult, it was based around two young teenage boys and their group of friends. And figuring out your sexuality and all this stuff. But I just thought that they just, and it comes from a series of books, I believe, young adult books. And I just felt like it was a lot of big topics handled really well. And some TV shows, I hate when they like really force the awkwardness and these big scenarios that you need to get through and everything's okay at the end. Like they just don't do that. It's just like this like nice ebb and flow of tough things, but handled with like care and love and empathy. And some of the parental characters were really nice as well. So I really liked that.
That's very great.
I don't know. Mine might be like kind of obvious, but I'm obsessed with my daughter. I'm always obsessed with her every week, but like 10 days ago or so, she started walking and now she runs everywhere and she doesn't have the stability, but she wants to go fast. And so she just runs places and just falls over and pops back up and keeps running. And now she won't let me carry her anywhere. She insists on walking herself, but she's not great at it. And I feel that I've entered just this really amazing point of her childhood where it's been quite hard up to this point. Like they can't communicate obviously and really do anything without you. But like there's been a couple moments the last week where her personality is starting to come through. And like the other day she was super quiet and I was hanging laundry and I was like, man, I wonder what she's doing. And I walked around the corner and she was just like sat in her reading nook, just like looking through a book. And I was like, holy crap. My kid is so freaking cool. So I am obsessed. I'm obsessed with Lila.
That's sweet.
That's lovely. The walking thing is such a big step. Obviously, I mean, no pun intended, but
literally
such a big developmental stage, but also just it opens up their world so much, doesn't it? Their independence and their ability to, yeah, to just have that freedom to move around themselves is such a big thing. And I think it's easy to take that for granted. And you talked there about being able to communicate and, my boys picking up new words at a shocking rate of knots at the moment. And it's amazing to see that development and just seeing him be able to describe the world around him and ask for what he wants rather than just pointing. And yeah, it's quite an amazing thing. I knew I would look forward to, I knew I would enjoy this particular time, but seeing that developmental leap, pretty amazing. You got that to look forward to as well, Abby. So recommend it.
Yeah, I feel like I've loved every single stage that she's been in, even the hard ones, but I love every new stage the most. Like this morning I dropped her off at daycare and they have like a little book. They record like her nap, how she naps and what she eats and everything in. And she just like grabbed the book from me and just like walked down the hallway to her daycare class, like all by herself. And I was just like, okay, bye. You're only 15 months old. What is this? But man, is it cool to watch. Yeah, it's, you know, you like, you give birth to these little people and you have no idea what they're going to turn into. So when it finally starts to peep through, it's pretty rad.
Agreed.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up. Thanks everyone for listening to this Wheel Talk podcast. We'll be back next week to talk about the CMAC Ladies Tour. The season's almost done. And so are we.